Hey guys, it's James Chester here. You're listening to the Gather Round the Lamp podcast by underagaslitlamp.com.
Gather Round the Lamp, an Aston Villa podcast.
And instead it goes to Bailey!
Welcome, villains, and gather round for this week's episode of Gather Round the Lamp, an Aston Villa podcast by underagaslitlamp.com. They say every action has an equal and opposite reaction, and we hopefully saw the start of Villa's reaction to recent adversity in West London last Saturday. As ever, we're here to give our reaction. I'm your host, Andy, and this week, it's a warm welcome back to Dan.
Thanks, Andy. Hi, listener. It's been a while. Thanks for the theoretical physics lesson there to kickstart things. Andy's in his white coat and ready to guide us through another lesson about Villa.
Yeah, if you hear an explosion, that's my test tubes going off.
But that's the mad scientist of football podcasting.
Yeah, well, I mean, could we describe Unai Emery as a mad scientist?
He would be, wouldn't he? He's kind of the crazed, fevered man behind the scenes who hasn't slept. And maybe there's an Oppenheimer-style film we can make where it's just Unai Emery not eating or sleeping and creating the ultimate weapon, a footballing weapon involving Pau Torres and Clement Lenglet at its base.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, yeah, we'll get straight onto that because obviously we were away at Fulham on Saturday afternoon, 3 o'clock kickoff. Bit of a rarity that one, but we'll start off talking about Pau Torres, I think, because he was back in the lineup, replacing Diego Carlos, who's, as we suspected on last week's show, is out for 3 to 4 weeks. We're hearing with a hamstring injury. But Torres came back in. It's a long-awaited return, really. He's missed 10 games, of which we've only won three. That's in all competitions. And he came back in and he was first on a lot of the metrics, including obviously number of touches and number of passes, number of pressurized passes, and you know, all sorts of things, really. And he had a really wonderful game, I think, at the back for Villa. I mean, we don't really want this situation or like this situation, do we? Where we're reliant on one player so much, but Torres just seems so integral now to Emery's game plan and the style of play.
Yeah, no Pau, no party is kind of the motto that I seem to be getting from it. But you were right. He's number one in so many metrics on the game on Saturday, but also for the squad. I think I was reading something today that he's number one for switches of play and number one for progressive passes on the team, which is crazy when you're talking about a centre-back. I think last time I was on, we were talking about him being our playmaker, and at the time, it felt a little bit churlish to be talking about a centre-back like that. But watching him come back on Saturday, it was, I think we were bang on describing him like that. But I was a little bit nervous, actually, about him coming back in. I don't know about you, because he's been a bit... Emery clearly hasn't wanted to throw him into the firing line again, whether that's the injury's been not as far along as he'd want, or whether he was worried about him getting up to speed. But throwing him into a Saturday against Fulham, who were pretty decent at home, I was worried he might not be ready, but boy, he was.
Yeah, he certainly was. I think maybe the previous games, I think he was back for the Chelsea FA Cup game, wasn't he? And then obviously Manchester United at the weekend. And he was perhaps just a bit too soon before, like since he'd started back training properly. So although he was technically available and would have probably been fit to play had he needed to. They perhaps didn't feel that they needed to take that risk so soon, but just having that extra week training and building it up and you know, testing the ankle, I suppose, on the training pitch and in the gym and all that sort of thing, perhaps made them more confident. And of course, needs must, don't they? So, you know, he's Diego Carlos, you know, goes down with a hamstring injury in the week, and we're obviously without Konsa, and it was probably a choice between either picking Pau Torres and moving Longley to the other side, or picking Callum Chambers, and clearly Emery felt it was worth the risk.
Break glass in case of emergency, Callum Chambers.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, it's just great to see him back. There's a real feeling, isn't there, when he's on the field, that things are under control. That's the thing I get, and perhaps similar to how we felt when Tyrone Mings was there, obviously, sort of last season, and very much the leader of that back four, you know, and controlling things further forward as well, very much so. But Torres is, in terms of on the ball stuff, he's on a different level to everyone on the field. I think he's just such a good player. You know, so many qualities on the ball, and just understands the game, just reads the game so well.
I think you're right on the reading of the game, and you've always been actually a real staunch supporter of Pau Torres, even when some of us weren't. And I think we saw that on Saturday, that he's almost a conductor at the back, isn't he? He kind of, and it's so important to how we play. I think the recent kind of wobbles have happened because we couldn't play out from the back. We saw so many teams pressing us high, and we had that disjoint between defence and goalkeeper and midfield. And one of the things that was quite interesting, I think Fulham tried to do it here as well, is teams have almost gone man for man against us, like almost like Bielsa's Leeds did. And the idea is, it's like, well, we'll push you high and it's up to you to play through us. And that's a good tactic when you're up against Clement Lenglet and Diego Carlos, neither of which are particularly great on the ball, but you put Pau Torres in there and he'll pick you apart. And the first Villa goal was very much that. He lovely kind of skipped past the defender and laid a pass in. And that was a constant threat all afternoon. But I mean, we've talked a lot about his passing here, but I thought actually his defending was spot on this weekend too. He's, especially after they scored the goal, and I'm jumping ahead a bit, but it was kind of backs to the wall stuff, which we don't really associate with Torres. He's the, you know, to borrow the horrible football cliche, a bit of a Rolls Royce, but he was properly mucking in at the back. And I thought we saw stronger defending than perhaps I've given him credit for in the past. And I thought him and Lenglet, actually both of them played superbly well at the defensive aspect of the game as well.
Yeah, well, that's it. That was the major criticism, wasn't it, at the start of the season? I mean, if we go back to when he was signed, there was a lot of kind of people saying, well, why are we signing this player? We don't need him. We've got Tyrone Mings. Where's he going to play? Who's going to play? Can you play two left-footed centre-backs? And all this kind of thing, which I suppose, you know, these are the kind of questions that supporters ask, don't they, when new players come into the club. But obviously Mings getting injured kind of answered that initial question of where he would play. And then it was about, you know, do we lack something sort of in terms of physicality at the back? And, you know, that kind of, you know, if you do have to sort of defend your penalty area for long periods of time, has Pau Torres got that in him in the same way that Mings and Konsa have? And I'm not sure, really. I'm not sure we've really answered that. And I'm sure he has got those attributes to some degree. But I've always said that when Pau Torres is in the team, and if the team is functioning how Emery wants it to, you don't need those kind of defensive sort of last-ditch qualities quite so much. You know, maybe that's part of the answer. Although I think, you know, they did have to defend quite a bit sort of late on in the game, didn't they? And they managed it. They saw the game out.
Yeah, and I think you're right about... I mean, we're obviously missing Boubacar Kamara for this game, and we'll come on to him later. And a nice touch from the lads with the message on the shirt, the ubiquitous now message on the shirt before the game. I think the Villa kit man's had a busy job this year with all the ACL injuries and the T-shirts he's had to make. But there's an interesting thing now. Without Kamara, we're a weaker team defensively. And there's just no way of replacing that, right? We don't have another strapping central midfielder to throw in there to cover his hole. But if you hold on to the ball, you have to do a lot less defending. We see it with Man City all the time. If you've got 60, 70% possession, that's a lot less defending you've got to do, especially if you can manage the counter-attack. So I think you're right. I think Pau Torres comes in and is an adequate defensive replacement for Boubacar Kamara, but not because he can throw himself into last-ditch tackles and win headers, but precisely because he can hold on to the ball. And the longer we hold on to the ball, the opposition can't score if we've got it. It's kind of Spanish tiki-taka is a defensive strategy. It's about winning the game because the opposition can't get the ball. And sometimes that can be a bit boring, but I'd be happy to watch boring Villa for the rest of the season if we meant picking up points despite the horror show of injuries we've currently got.
Yeah, and do you think there's a case perhaps that Pau Torres kind of stepping into midfield a little bit does give us that extra man at times in midfield? Doesn't it? Like, I suppose maybe that's what we've been missing. That's what Douglas Luiz and Kamara to some extent, and McGinn when he's played there when Kamara was suspended, where perhaps that's what they've been missing in terms of that little bit of control on the ball, you know, having that extra man sort of quite close to them, you know, not kind of, you know, sort of fizzing the ball into them from 20 yards, just that bit closer and a bit more considered sort of playing it into them.
Yeah, and I think it goes back to that thing I mentioned about other teams going man for man against us, because we're so deep when we're playing it out from the back. Other teams can do that against us and not really run any risks. I mean, apart from a Hollywood ball over the top to Watkins, there's no real risk about pressing us high when we're not able to play it through them. But suddenly, as you say, if you've got Torres stepping beyond the guy pressing him and stepping into midfield, you've broken the lines and you're suddenly, you know, the opposition are on the back foot and you've got that overload that Emery always looks for. So I think you're right. It takes the pressure off Douglas Luiz and it creates a bit of a domino effect because you've got something to worry about at the base for Villa now. You can't give Pau Torres time on the ball. But by the same token, you can't really afford to stick a man on him and try and press him because he'll just glide past that man. So it creates that domino effect. I think it's similar with Watkins. Like when we don't have a Diaby or a Bailey on form up there with him, then he's kind of one man on an island and he's really easy to mark out of a game. You almost need that distraction, that other threat there to create the space for him. And yeah, I think the balance of the side is just so much better with Torres in there. And it just looks different, doesn't it? Like the way we were pinging the ball around, as you say, the ball's kind of going to feet more. There's confidence. That was the big thing I noticed as well. This is a team that's been decimated by injuries. Big, big players and big personalities are out injured. And yet we started this game full of confidence, full of verve. And I know that wobbled as the game went on, but a player like that would fill you with confidence, wouldn't he, when he's playing beside you, in front of you, behind you. He's just a great player.
Yeah, he is a superb player. And obviously he's very, very effective, but he's also great to watch.
Yeah.
he's really sort of silky and good on the ball. And, you know, you don't often say that about defenders. I did see someone on social media kind of wondering whether we finally found someone to step into Paul McGrath's shoes, you know, after 30 years, you know. So, you know, that's a big claim, isn't it? And, you know, I suppose the point was made that yeah, absolutely, you know, because he offers you something different just as McGrath did back then, you know. McGrath was so much better on the ball than most centre backs, and Torres is so much better at, you know, at bringing the ball out and you know and playing breaking the lines, essentially, than most centre-back.
I was going to ask you, actually, and I've got the feeling that Torres has the makings of the best centre-back to kind of take to the pitch in Villa colours, because he does have that kind of X factor that you're saying about with McGrath there. And we've had some great centre-backs through the years. I think of the likes of Larsson and Southgate and Echio. And I mean, Gareth Barry, when he was playing left-back in a back three, was phenomenal for the same reasons. And I just get the feeling with Torres, he's a cut above, isn't he? He's a proper world-class talent. And he does. He's got the makings of being possibly the best defender I've seen at Villa Park. And I look back to the business, and it still feels crazy that we got him as cheap as we did, because I think he'd walk into any team above us. So it's another signal of Villa doing good business as well.
Well, there is that as well. And wondering whether, you know, I mean, whether anyone would come in and be able to afford him at the moment. But certainly you wonder whether one or two managers are wondering if they should have, you know, got him ahead of us, really, you know. But I'm imagining the Emery factor was a huge thing, you know, because certainly Emery was the making of him at Villarreal. And clearly he just gets it, doesn't he? He just understands what Emery wants, and he can do it. You know, he can just recreate that. And it's just great to have that, you know. And hopefully he's fine now, and he doesn't miss a game till the end of the season, because we definitely need him. But obviously, you know, he played alongside Clement Longley, didn't he, who, you know, was signed on loan to be his understudy, really, wasn't he, when Tyrone Mings got injured at the start of the season. And of course, there was a lot of debate as to whether they could play together, because they both kick the ball with their left foot, which seems strange. We're used to it the other way around, aren't we? Because there's so many more sort of right-footed players, I think, than there are left-footed players. So you don't necessarily need two left-footed centre-backs. But it's funny to think that, you know, they wouldn't be able to play together. But they did, and Longley, you know, came in and did a really steady job, didn't he? Next to him on the right hand side, with Matty Cash sort of playing very much next to them in a back three when we sort of had the ball, not his usual kind of buccaneering self down the right, was he? He was kind of tucked in there. I just wondered with Longley. I mean, he's clearly a very good player. There's no two ways about it. You know, he's our fifth choice centre back, you know, but he's an excellent footballer, isn't he? And he's a very good defender. And I just wonder whether we might see a better side of him now if he's playing with Torres, rather than trying to sort of emulate what Torres does, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I think you're right, because I don't think there's anyone that can emulate what Torres does. You're on a bit of a hide into nothing there. But he's a great, great defender. Well, great. He's a solidly average to above average defender. I mean, he's as far as fourth, fifth choice centre-backs go, it really isn't bad. It's a long way from days gone by when we were rolling out absolute dregs. And I mean, it's not so long ago he was a French international. He was playing at Spurs last year, playing well for them. And I think he's been solid for Villa this year whenever he's been called upon. But as you say, we've been asking him to do the wrong things. I think he's kind of proper agricultural meat and potato centre-back who's been asked to be a ball-playing centre-back. And all of a sudden now he gets to go back to his day job. But it's interesting, actually, you saying about the two left-footers, because it is an odd wrinkle that you don't really get in football. And I kind of looked into it a little bit, and there's not really any hard and fast facts out there, but the general feeling is apparently that most left-footed players tend to not be as two-footed as right-footed players. So they're a lot weaker on their right foot in comparison. But then there's also apparently something to do with body shape of left-footed players, and they make them easier to press, apparently, which is why a lot of managers don't like it. It's above my pay grade. I don't understand how that works. But apparently the way they pass the ball makes them easier to press. But look, it worked on the weekend. It worked really well. And hat tip to Matty Cash, who, you know, has come in for criticism, including from me, because he's been rank average for the last few weeks. And he was asked to perform a very different job here, and I thought performed it admirably. He was excellent defensively, and I think putting a real shift on the right for us as that kind of right centre back that we normally see Konsa play. And then, I mean, you and I were chatting before coming on, Andy, he might be the new goldfish for Aston Villa, is when we're asking him to do more than he's capable of, or giving him the choice to make his own decisions, it doesn't go great. But when you're told exactly where he needs to be and what he needs to do, then he does his job well.
Yeah, I think we've seen this from him, and I think he's a very capable player. There's not one element that suggests that he isn't good enough to play for Aston Villa. But I do think you need to kind of take some of the decision making out of his hands, give him a job to do, and he'll do it. And if you want him to play as a, you know, the right-sided midfielder, which he's done to good effect at times this season, then he can do that. Or he can tuck in and be a defender, defensive right back, because he's an excellent one-on-one defender. He's really, really good at that. And I think positionally he's good. I think he knows his job, and he works really hard. So I think in those cases, that's when you get the best out of him. And we were saying about how, you know, Ashley Young did that role last season to good effect, and that's probably because of perhaps his engine isn't what it was, and he wouldn't have been able to get up and down the right-hand side quite so much. So, you know, he played in that very defensive right-back role, and that suits the way we play, particularly when you've got Alex Moreno on the other side, who will bomb on, and that's his strength, isn't it? Getting forward and creating havoc down the left. So, you know, I think it really suits Matty Cash, and I think if that's the position he plays till the end of the season, you know, alongside potentially Longley and Pau Torres, I think we'll be absolutely fine. I think he's more than capable of doing that role really successfully.
Yeah, I agree. And I think the side looks a lot more balanced when he's not being asked to bomb on, because when him and Moreno both go forwards, then it's often Kamara who drops in to make a back three. And it looks a little bit awkward at times, I think. And I think we've been caught out on the break by it. So I much prefer this structure. And I actually think, interestingly, this is how we'd have lined up should Mings have not been injured. I think Mings would have been the right-handed centre-back, and Konsa would have been the right back, and everyone shuffled over in possession. I think that's exactly what would have happened. So it's I think we're kind of seeing the Emery plan. We're just seeing it with slightly different tools and chess pieces than maybe he had in his mind. But it's, again, you know, the mark of a great manager is he tinkered with things here. There's a great piece in The Athletic today about how Villa changed their goal kick routine so that, you know, Langley was taking the kick so that it created a pass before Martinez maybe had it. And it's little tweaks like that and little positioning tweaks that we've made specifically against Fulham that shows you the value of Emery, because he's not just throwing, you know, magnets at a board and putting names under them. He's looking, sure, we've got horrific injuries. He's having to tear up his plan A, his plan B. It's probably C and D has been ripped up too now. But he's come up with a new plan. He's changing the way we play. He's not just throwing the pieces, you know, different names onto the same team sheet and hoping we play the same way. He's adjusting to what the world throws at him, and it's thrown a hell of a lot at him this season.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is what myself and Regan were discussing last week, is this idea, because when you go through it, actually, the first 11 is not that far away from the first 11 you'd pick if everyone was fit, potentially, you know. So it's just about finding that new way, isn't it, and maximizing the strengths. And I say it like it's easy,
yeah,
but for someone like Emery, it is, isn't it? That's how he manages, that's how he sets his teams up. You know, it doesn't really matter who he's got available, he'll find a way to give it a chance, you know, to give them a chance of winning, you know. And that's certainly what we saw, I think, at the weekend a team, you know, potentially that could have been really, really low on confidence after the injuries, the recent injuries with Kamara and Konsa, adding to the ones previously, coming off the back of, you know, three bad home defeats. It's a difficult place to go. Fulham, they win games at home, and
they're great at home.
Yeah, and I think it, you know, and for a lot of them, it would have, you know, memories of the Gerrard out night last time they were there. You know, which was a horrendous evening for everyone involved, I think, wasn't it? So
I was quite happy after the news broke, but up until then, it was a horrific night.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a means to an end in many ways. But, you know, it would have been, you know, players remember those things, don't they? And I think, you know, that it was, you know, just great to see them back playing with such confidence. And I thought the first goal was symptomatic of that. You know, it was a number of passes, you know, they recycled the ball and went again at just slightly different angle. And, you know, three or four passes just straight through the middle of Fulham, and Watkins was on the end. Oh, so it was the second goal that was, wasn't it? And Watkins was on the end of it. So it was, yeah, really, really, really good to see them playing in that way again with that level of confidence.
Do you think, to pick up on your point about saying that we've got the right man for the job to kind of overcome the injuries, I think Emery kind of enjoys this a little bit, you know. I think obviously he'd rather have his first choice players out there, but he strikes me as a man who sees it as an opportunity rather than something, you know, crushing end to the season. I think he'd secretly quite like to be successful with a bang average team. It's almost like the Prince's Bride, you know, where you've got the guy fighting with his right hand or whatever and the hand high behind his back, and then all of a sudden he kind of puts the sword in the other hand and says, oh, I'm left-handed too, which is me misremembering the Princess Bride because it's been a while. But I like the idea of Emery doing that this season. He's kind of performing miracles, and then all of a sudden, like, out of the fog comes Mings, Buendia and Kamara, and it's like, ha-ha, I was fooling you all along. Here's my amazing team with the actual players that were meant to be in it. But I'm rambling now. But anyway, I just kind of think Unai Emery probably likes to overcome the problems that are posed. I reckon he'd quite enjoy trying to find a place for Callum Chambers in this team and winning games as a result of it. That's what I'm going to go out on a limb and say.
Well, I mean, one more injury in that back line, and he that may become a reality for sure, I think. But yeah, I think you're right. I think he probably does enjoy it. It's probably interesting for him. And the other aspect to it is he's not one to really tinker with the team, yeah. Is he? And I think injuries provide him with an opportunity, don't they, to see what the next guy is like. And I think that's part of it as well. And as a fan, it's really nice, because I thought when Kamara got injured, that's devastating, because he's such a good player and he's a young player and he's had a few injuries and now he's got a really big one, and you don't want it for him and you don't want it for the team. But then when you think about it in terms of the team, it's quite exciting, because they've still got McGinn, they've still got Tielemans, Ramsey, Irigbunam coming through, and they can make it work. And there's that Emery will be going, right, okay, well, how are we gonna set this up so we alter things slightly and to get the right result. And I think it is absolutely, he sees it as a challenge and an exciting one, and from a fan's point of view, it's nice, because you don't worry too much about it, you know.
Yeah, I'm the same. I feel oddly confident that we'll be fine, and it's kind of, you mentioned in Tielemans there. Sorry, I'm jumping all over the order of your carefully prepared notes, Andy.
Carry on.
I thought it was interesting that you decided to move McGinn back into the holding role and put Tielemans up top, whereas maybe we'd have expected it to be the other way around, given that we signed Tielemans as a central midfielder. But again, he just finds solutions, doesn't he? And that's what he's there for. He finds a solution to the problem facing him that week. And sure, it might not be the permanent solution to Villa's midfield or defensive issues, but it's the one we needed against Fulham, and he deployed it perfectly.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, we'll talk about the midfield because, like you say, McGinn kind of, I think, expectedly, really, I certainly expected McGinn to drop into that sort of double pivot role. And Tielemans came in effectively to replace Camara, and he played sort of further forward in a more sort of number 10 position. Bailey sort of off the right as he does, and Ramsey on the other side, and it seemed to work really well. I mean, do you think this is how they will kind of set up now? Do you think McGinn will take that role, or do you think they will change it for different games and kind of see, and do you think, in a way, you know what do you think we're going to lose from McGinn's game by doing that?
I thought the interesting thing, I think you're probably right, we all thought McGinn would be in that pivot. I think what I didn't expect, though, is that he'd be the deepest part of that pivot. I kind of thought that Dougie would become the de facto defensive midfielder and McGinn would roam further forwards. But against Fulham, it was McGinn who was deepest a lot of the time, and him taking on the defensive responsibility. And I guess that's because, I mean, as we saw when Tielemans was put through on goal, he's not the paciest of players, is he? It's Youri Tielemans. He makes you and I look rapid, Andy, and that's saying something. So I think the problem is if we stuck him in that central midfield, we'd be losing a lot of energy and a lot of dynamism, which is exactly what McGinn brings us. So, you know, we know what we're losing with Kamara. We're losing that defensive output. He's great on the ball and he can break the press really well. But I think more than anything, he's a really great athlete and he knows when to press and when not to press. And that's exactly what John McGinn is like too. He's for all of his energy, for all of his shooting ability and the gravitational pull of his behind, he's a player who makes the right decisions, I think, more often than not, and that's why Emery trusts him. So you stick him in that role, and he actually recreates a lot of what Kamara does. And as we saw for the second goal, probably has a wider range of passing than Kamara too. He can thread that ball through to Ollie Watkins. So I actually quite like the balance in this midfield with him and Dougie in it. They're both little terriers in there. I do just worry about the physicality of Villa against a different team. I mean, Fulham aren't exactly a team of monsters, and I have a feel like if we come up against luckily we don't have to play Newcastle again, but we come up against a physical team, we're going to come unstuck with that midfield just for sheer size. But yeah, I really like to see McGinn in there. Tielemans I'm still undecided upon, but if he's further forwards, it's less of a worry.
Yeah, he's just one of those, isn't he? I think we found before that he needs a few games, doesn't he, to get into his stride, really. So maybe we'll with these games coming up if he can keep his place. You're right about his pace. I would definitely fancy myself in a race, but only if I was rolling down a hill, I think. But he is an excellent player, an excellent passer of the ball. You know, that's his wheelhouse, and getting him into positions where he can sort of thread that ball in for Watkins. You know, he made a living doing that for Jamie Vardy, didn't he, for two or three years. So, you know, that's not beyond the realms of possibility, and I think you want that, really. You want him, you know, creating chances for Ollie Watkins, whereas, you know, McGinn perhaps isn't going to create quite so many, if that makes sense. So you want Tielemans further forward. I just think you lose a little bit of the energy, don't you, from McGinn when he's further back, you know, in those forward areas and in the press. But it's up to the other players to step up and, you know, and do their bit in terms of that, isn't it? And whoever comes in, whoever plays in that role, that's their job, you know, and you know, they've got to sort of go at it with the same gusto as John McGinn. But I think it's just about finding the balance, isn't it? That's all you can do. These are the players we've got available. Find the best solution and go for it, really. And so far, so good in terms of that midfield, I think. And there are options, aren't there? You know, there are you know, there is Diaby who can come in. There is Irigbunam who can come in. They can switch things around a bit, you know. And of course, you know, maybe against more, you know, more physical sides, more physical midfields. They have got Pau Torres sort of stepping in, haven't they, to midfield? And you know, and like I say, if you've got the ball and you pass accurately to each other, it doesn't matter how big the opposition are, you know. And that's the other thing about it, isn't it? It's keeping the ball. That's the whole point of it. So yeah, very happy. Do you think we will see a bit more of Tim Irigbunam over the next few weeks? Do you think he'll get more of an opportunity as time goes on?
I guess he'll have to, because I mean, if God forbid, kind of McGinn or Dougie breaks, then we are looking at the break class in case of emergency Callum Chambers deployment, which no one wants to see. So I think Irigbunam needs the minutes, and we've all got high hopes for him, and I think he's similar in that, as I was saying, that energetic kind of good decision maker too. He's played games further forwards, I think, and so he's got that football brain on him, which I think the position demands. And I'd like to see more of him, if I'm completely honest, too. As you were saying, it's kind of sometimes there's a silver lining to injuries, is you get to see different players and different lineups. I'd actually quite like to see Tim start. I'd like to see what he's got, because, you know, it's about time he either broke through into the team or we moved him on. And maybe this is the opportunity for him to show us that maybe a Tielemans can be moved on, or maybe even a Dougie or Kamara can be moved on, and we've got an heir apparent waiting. But yeah, I'd like to see him get minutes, and I think he will get minutes, because we've still got a lot of games to go before the end of the season, both in the league and in the conference. So so he's probably going to be required at some point.
Yeah, absolutely. That's assuming we get through the Conference League rounds, Dan, of course.
When it returns in March or whatever, it's so bizarre that it makes that top in the group even more important now, given the injuries we've got. I kind of was thinking that today, because they were talking about the conference on TNT Sports or whatever the other day, and I hurriedly looked for the Villa fixture before remembering we get a bye this round, which is fantastic. So
yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think it's early to the middle of next month, isn't it, that we play our next game. So we find out this Friday when the Conference League draw takes place for the next round. So we'll find out who we've got over the two legs. But we're going to be, I think I read that we are going to be away for the second leg, which is good to know. You know, that's gives us a little advantage, I think, hopefully. So we'll await that with interest. But of course, I mean, the main story of the Fulham game, of course, there's no denying, was Ollie Watkins. Just an absolutely unbelievable performance again from Watkins. Two goals either side of half time, both absolute ruthless finishes. To take him to 13 league goals for the season. I think he's also got 10 assists, which is, I think I saw, he's the highest or joint highest assist maker.
Joint highest, I think, yeah.
You know, and he just needs now sort of one in two to reach the magic number of 20 league goals, which I've never seen in my lifetime. I've never seen an Aston Villa player get 20 league goals. In the Premier League, of course, Tammy did it, didn't he? In the Championship, I think York got 19. I think Benteke.
Did Angel do it, or was that across all competitions? It must have been across all. If he ever even got close, there was just a little alarm bell going off in my head that Juan Pablo Angel hit 20 at one point.
No, as far as I know, he probably got, because York did it over the full season. Platt did it. I think Benteke probably did it as well, but league goals, I think the highest anyone has got in that time is 19, which I think Benteke and Dwight York got. I mean, obviously, if I'm wrong on that, then I apologise. But I'm pretty sure the last player to do it in the top flight was Peter Wyth for Villa, which is a long time ago, and it's well overdue. And Watkins is on course to do that now this season. There's been an awful lot of discussion about Ollie Watkins, hasn't there? I don't know if you're aware, really, online and on various podcasts. And we've discussed Watkins on a number of occasions on here as well. And, you know, to do with the chances he does miss. We talked last week about the one he missed from very close range against Man United. I remember another one at Wolves, last kick of the game, headed it against the post from the middle of the goal. And, you know, tough ones to take, really. But, I mean, what's your view on this? I mean, do those misses, are these just misses that happen to all strikers? Or is this the sort of thing that's kind of stopping him really from hitting the really elite heights? Or do you think he is at the elite heights already?
I think he's well on his way to the elite heights. There's very few strikers in the world who score the goals he scores and gets the assists he gets. He's been involved either goal or assist in 52% of Villa's goals this year. He's a vital cog in one of the top four teams in the Premier League. He's a phenomenal striker. And yes, he misses chances, but all strikers miss chances. I mean, look at a City game at the weekend. Erling Haaland missed chance after chance when it was, I think he had 1.82 XG or something on his own, and he missed them all. And he's the best striker in the world, and no one's saying he's not clinical enough. It's just the simple matter that strikers miss chances. You can't score every opportunity you're presented with. Even the best of strikers have off days. But the very best strikers have those off days and then come right back the next week and find themselves in exactly the same place again with the exact same opportunity. And rarely do they miss twice. And I think that's been the great thing about Ollie Watkins this year in comparison to other years is, in other years, he's been streaky. He either scores a bunch or misses a bunch. It feels like this year, if he has an off match like last week, he comes right back the next week with the goal-scoring prowess. And the finishes here were top, top draw finishes. The first one was incredible. And the second one, too, just as soon as he got the ball, there was no doubt it was going in. It felt like lights out. And I mean, he could have got a third and probably should have got a penalty as well. And we'd be talking about a Watkins hat trick. But I think he's already well on his way to being elite level. He's vital to Villa. His movement is phenomenal the last few weeks. And I really don't care that he misses chances as long as he keeps getting into those spots. Because if he does keep getting into those spots, he'll make it to 20 league goals this year, whether he's the first since whoever it is or not, he's going to make it to that figure. And I genuinely think there's going to be a lot of top clubs sniffing around him because there's a shortage of top strikers in the world and even fewer who can both score and create goals.
Yeah, I think that is the thing that he's got to his... That's the real string he's got to his bow, isn't it? Is that all-round game with the goals and with the assists. You know, he's not just one or the other, as so many strikers are, you know. Yeah. That was always the argument for Emil Heskey, wasn't it? You know, he makes the game easier for those around him, but he doesn't necessarily produce the numbers. But you don't get that with Watkins. He is the focal point. And this is kind of what I was saying about Tielemans. You know, you need a player like Tielemans in a position where he can feed Watkins more regularly, and you know, because that's what he does. And I think if that's the case, you put the chances in front of Ollie Watkins. He will miss some because I still maintain he's not a natural finisher. I think he's worked incredibly hard on that side of his game, and he I mean the two goals, like you say, on Saturday were outstanding finishes, really top draw, particularly the second one. I thought the second one was just, you know, that was a proper, you know, world-class striker's finish, I think. you know, but there will be those occasions where it slips, and you know that maybe whether it's a concentration or whether it's just the way it falls to him or the way he strikes the ball, but you know that will happen. But if you, it's creating, it's the number of chances, and what has changed with him is he doesn't care anymore if he misses. You know, he just like you say, he just cracks on and goes again. So I can kind of say I've heard a lot from either side on this, really, whether he's inconsistent or whether he's whether the good side outweighs the negative side. And I have to say, I think you can kind of see why people make the inconsistent point, but I think it's now a historical argument. I think he was inconsistent, like you say, he was streaky. He would sort of miss an awful lot of chances at times, or just not get chances. Now he's pretty reliable. He's the most reliable he's ever been in a Villa shirt. And I think he suffers from having those 2 or 3 years with us. I think I said before on a podcast that if we'd assigned him last January and he'd produced what he was producing now, there'd be no question in anyone's mind. You know, it's only because of the 2.5 years or so prior to that where he was a bit up and down, you know. But generally, even then, over the course of the time, he's generally been a positive influence on the team. And
Always been impressive too, even when he was toiling in Smith's sides and kind of under Gerrard even. You got the same Ollie Watkins pretty much. You always got that work output. He's always been in the right positions, I feel like. It's even when he's not been scoring goals, it's not been for a want of chances, has it? I feel like he's always had chances in a Villa shirt. He's just not always tucked them away. But I mean, you were saying he's kind of top in the assist charts. I mean, imagine if he does end the season on 20 goals and 10 assists or whatever it is. Those are Henry-like numbers, right? Like Thierry Henry. There's very few strikers that create goals and score them. And I was actually having a chat with a couple of friends and we were kind of putting together our England teams for the summer, because it's what you do. And I was making the case that Ollie Watkins maybe starts left wing in that kind of vacated Rashford role in a Southgate side, purely because he's probably having the best season of any English striker out there, especially with Harry Kane going off the boil after his incredible start to the season. He's really coming into his own. It reminds me a little bit of when Grealish started to get properly good, you know, and it felt like the rest of the world hadn't cottoned on to it. I'm getting inklings of that with Watkins at the moment, that he's getting proper good and the rest of the league hasn't quite switched on to it yet. Maybe even the rest of the fan base hasn't.
Yeah, or they have, and he's just unplayable at times. And
well, yeah,
I think there is that element to him. I think he definitely amongst Villa fans, he definitely suffers from having the couple of years, very much like Dwight York did. You know, Dwight York was always the Neely man until he became, you know, the absolute centerpiece of the team. And by then it was too late and he'd had his head turned, you know, and he was going to be going. But, you know, it's a little bit like that with Watkins. He's always been like I think a lot of fans saw him as almost the stepping stone striker, the one that would get us so far. And then we would buy a world-class number nine. But what's happened is Watkins has become that number nine that we want, and we just need to cotton onto that and realise it and fully embrace him. I think most fans do, to be honest. I think the doubters are very much the minority, but I think you know, he's on course to be a, you know, to go down in history. If he does get those 20 goals, that puts him up there with Peter Withe and Andy Gray, you know. That's the, you know, that really does cement him then as one of the greats. And you know, it's very, very likely that it'll happen this season.
I'm not afraid to go pick up a flare that's been thrown on the pitch either and do some cleaning. He's a good, hard-working lad there.
Yeah, what, certainly one for the photographers, that, wasn't it?
I think. Yeah, perfect.
I think they enjoyed that.
Watkins fireworks headlines wrote themselves in association with that picture.
Absolutely, absolutely. But, he's going to have an opportunity to add to his tally this Saturday, another Saturday, 3 o'clock. Kickoff, Dan. It's could get used to this. It's Nottingham Forest at home, and they'll be coming obviously desperate for the points this weekend. Possibly by then, we're recording this on Monday night. They may have had some kind of decision by then about their possible points deduction for the profit and sustainability rules that they've apparently broken, so they may be even more in more dire straits. They're currently 15th, 5 points above the relegation zone, although Everton are that team, so they may well sort of have another points deduction as well. Their results have been obviously up and down so far under Nuno. He had a really good start initially, but things have gone a bit up and down since, but they did beat West Ham 2-0 last weekend. And they seem to have a bit more solidity about them, a bit more of a style of play. And I think the team looks a lot more settled than it did previously under Steve Cooper. Morgan Gibbs-White and Ilanga are definitely the danger men, but they also have, of course, Hudson-Odoi, who is starting to show some of that undoubted potential from his Chelsea Academy days when he was going to be the next big thing. Villa, I guess, are likely to be unchanged, really. Luca Dean may be pushing for a start at left back. It could be an option. And, of course, there's always the chance that Diaby might come into contention to link up with Bailey, particularly at home. That seems to work quite well. This feels like a really tricky game, given the home form. And although we're coming off the back of a good performance and a win away from home, we need a home win, don't we, to get the confidence back up. How do you expect Villa to approach this one? How do you think they'll go for it?
I'm really looking forward to this one, and a little bit of revenge on the cards for me. It's the one result this year that really upsets me, is that loss at their place. Is we were flying high, we were playing fantastically, all eyes were on us, and then turned in one of our worst performances of the season, I think. We just weren't at the races that day, and I think they nullified us really well, and they're a good team, actually. Defensively, they've been better than I gave them credit for, and I think approaching this one, as we were saying earlier, control is going to be absolutely vital. The mistake we made at their place was letting them score first, so they got to dictate the game to us from that point. They didn't have to come out. They could sit deep, hit us on the counter, and they took us to pieces, really, in that game, despite us having tons of possession. And I think in this one, we've got to set the tempo from the off. We've got to control the match from the off. And I think vitally, we've got to score first. Because if they score first, they'll just dig in. And we know Villa can struggle against that low block, especially whilst missing players. So yeah, I think control's vital. I think tempo's vital. And I think we've just got to start on the front foot. We've seen Emery do it at Villa Park before, and Emery sides where they really kind of start off looking for that first goal. It's almost like they've got an extra gear for the first 10, 15 minutes. Get that early goal and then know that they can kind of control the rest of the game. And I'd like to see us do that here, kind of hair out the traps, get an early goal and then just knock the ball around for the rest of the afternoon and have a jolly old time. Because I do think the longer it goes on 0-0 or if we give them a goal, then it could be a tricky afternoon for Villa.
Yeah, I think that's certainly the case, isn't it? You know, there's definitely a sense of when Villa are ahead in the game that it feels certainly more comfortable, and like that then plays into our game plan, really. A lot of teams, when they're ahead, they drop back and they go a bit back to the wall, and they try to hang on to it, really. Whereas Villa just sort of take control of the possession and sort of make the most of the chaos that causes in the opposition defence, really. And it makes it, a far more sort of exciting afternoon for the fans, because we're kind of expecting to roll them over then. So, yeah, absolutely. That feels like always the game plan, particularly at home. That was something we did so well, didn't we? And we were on occasions kind of kicking towards the Holt end in the first half, almost to create that atmosphere and that real kind of fast start. And it worked quite well. But I guess that depends on winning the toss, doesn't it? So, you can't control that, really. But, that would certainly be good to have that type of performance, like a classic Emery home performance, and control the game for the most part. I think that'd certainly be good. I mean, I don't know about any team changes. I assume it'd be the same team if there's been no injuries, really.
You'd hope that there's no more injuries. We've had a dose of injuries for the year. I don't think Tielemans maybe did enough to justify the start again, but I mean, Diaby seems to be so far off the boil that maybe it's a case that we don't have an alternative to Tielemans. But I wouldn't mind. That would be the only one I'd be thinking about, is whether he did enough to hold on to the shirt. But yeah, I don't think we have any other players who can come in and say Luka Dean, but Moreno did nothing wrong as well in the shirt, and probably should have had a goal against Fulham, kind of unfairly ruled for offside.
Yes, well, the least said about that, I think, the better.
Yeah, let's not talk about referees.
You are right. I mean, that was an absolute joke, wasn't it? A joke of a decision. And, like we were saying, I think the referees have lost control of their own situation, it's going to take some clawing back, I think. But meanwhile, the game seems like a bit of a disaster zone, really. It's a nightmare. But we could do a whole podcast on referees and that sort of thing. But so what about a prediction then for Saturday?
Tough game, I think, ahead of us, but if we get that first goal, I think it will go on to be more comfortable. So I'll say 3-1 Villa, because we don't keep clean sheets anymore, do we? Clean sheets are out of fashion.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I feel like it's, we are due a big one at home, I think. I mean, every ounce of me really would take a nice 1-0, like you say, early goal, and then just knock it around for the rest of the game. But yeah, I think I would like a few goals. I'm going to go for 4-0.
Oh, bold. It's probably going to be a gritty 0-0 now or something. We've cursed it.
Yeah, I've probably gone a bit far there. But yeah, that's what I want more than what I think. So less of a prediction and more of a wish list. But I'll be very happy with that. Any kind of win on Saturday, just to keep us in fourth and keep that Champions League charge going, really. So great stuff. Well, I think we'll leave it there. I think that's all we've got time for. But thanks very much for joining me. Great to have you back on after a few weeks. Good to see you. And thanks to everyone for listening as well. Hope you're enjoying the shows. Thank you for all your support. Continued support this season. It's really great. And obviously check us out. If you're a first time listener, check us out on the social media sites. Give us a follow under agaslitlamp.com, and head over to the website as well to have a look. Hopefully some new articles going on fairly soon. So we'll see about that. And if you're going to the game on Saturday, have a great afternoon. We'll be back to review that next week and look ahead to the Luton match. But until then, stay safe and up the Villa.